Welcome back to part two of my interview with Matt Tobe.
Welcome to the Fitfluential Radio Podcast, the intersection of health, wellness, and fitness. Join host Kelly Olexa as she interviews thought leaders and world-class experts in order to demystify and deconstruct complex health and wellness topics. The goal of each episode is to provide you with actionable everyday tips and information that you can apply in your lifestyle. Now here's your host, Kelly Olexa.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fitfluential Radio. I am your host, Kelly Olexa, and today I am joined by Matt Tobe. Now, just to be clear, we are going to be airing, this is going to be a two-part episode of my interview with Matt Tobe, but we also are going to be featuring his wife, Felicia Tobe, on the show. Originally, we thought we'd do both of them as kind of a joint interview, but they both have such a different style and flair and depth of experience that we decided to divide that up. So I'm going to share with you a little bit about Matt and Felicia from their bio here, but just know that we will also have Felicia on the show separately. So Matt and Felicia Tobe are international fitness presenters. They are Beachbody Live Master Trainers and a fitness power couple that work hard to change lives every day. Matt and Felicia are a married couple that have made it their goals in life to help as many people as possible live to their true potential. Through their own experiences, they have learned ways to guide and navigate, not just around issues that stand in the way, but how to get through them when in the thick of the issues that couples and individuals face. They are parents of three boys. Again, international fitness presenters with an outstanding reputation in the industry. They are Fitfluential ambassadors and two of my, most energetic and dedicated Fitfluential ambassadors. I still remember how they wrote to us again and again saying, can we be ambassadors? And when they weren't active really on social media, they just kept trying and trying. These are two individuals that just are so dedicated to changing people's lives, and they're willing to do whatever it takes. So I'm excited to share this interview with you. Again, this is going to be my interview with Matt Tobe, and it's two parts. So enjoy this two-part series. This first part of the episode, in part one, you're going to hear us really have Matt talk about his fitness experience and what they do best, you know, how they help clients get in shape and maintain and put in place healthy habits. And then the second part of the show, we actually talk about Matt's former struggle with addiction. And it's a pretty intense conversation, but I know it's going to hit home with a lot of folks that might be struggling with addiction, ready to kind of make that first step to change their lives. And boy, you can't listen to somebody more motivating in that area than Matt Tobe. So I'm excited for you to hear from Matt, listen to his own personal experience getting fit and turning his life around after college, how he and Felicia maintain health in their family, and again, his conquering addiction in part two. So tune in. This is part one of my interview with Matt Tobe.
Today's Fitfluential Radio episode is sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and many more. 56% of Health IQ customers save up to 33% on their life insurance policies, and these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Health IQ can save their customers this much because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. To get your free quote today, mention the promo code FITFLUENTIAL when you talk to a Health IQ agent.
You and your wife are both in the fitness business, and you coach people and you motivate people, and you're so good, and you've been such a critical part of helping us launch this podcast, and you're just extraordinary people. I'm curious, this is a two-part question. Number one, when you met Felicia,
Were you both into fitness or did that develop later? And then number two, you've got three kids. You know, how do you balance the load of, you know, not making, because it's very easy if you're an adult and you get into fitness, health and wellness. You know, kids are so, their brains are forming, their attitudes are forming when they're young, right? And you don't want to get them into becoming obsessive about food and dieting and, you know, for young women, you know, feeling, having bad body image. So how do you seem to have a really healthy, poor choice of words, I wasn't trying to be punny, a healthy relationship with your family and your kids, and it's balanced, you go out and have treats, but how do you work that so that they're not going, oh God, I can't ever have anything bad to eat? I mean, how do you keep it real from a fitness, health, and wellness lifestyle perspective with your kids? So part one about Felicia, and then how do you as a family make fitness and fun and keeping it real? How do you implement that?
Okay, start off with Felicia. So I was in fitness, and fitness in general at the time, about 15, 20 years ago, was a very vain industry. Still is, essentially, because we're about looking good and whatnot. But it was more than about looking good. And when you're working in gyms, it was a lot of, you know, looking over your shoulder so other trainers wouldn't take your clients, whatnot. And I was looking to get out of the industry. So I joined another gym, and I stopped working at one gym and just was going to be another life transition. And there was this trainer who was working there during the days. And I knew one of the other trainers there. And I kept on watching. I'd be on the Stairmaster, which was my thing. I would go all out on the Stairmaster for half an hour with just my like ankles lifting up. My feet didn't actually do anything. I got 3 inches here or there, but I was drenched in sweat and everyone made fun of me. They called me flipper feet because I'd be I would watch this girl who was one of the trainers while I was on the treadmill. Not stalky, not crazy like, not kooky eyes, but just like, she's kind of cute. She looks nice, blah, blah, blah. And then one of the trainers went, you know, before you transition out of the industry, we're always looking for another trainer here. Why don't you come work here until you figure out where you want to go? Just extra cash. I'm like, you know what? Not a bad idea. I got a job at this gym, and it was funny because the person who showed me around on how to open up the gym in the mornings was this girl that I kept on kind of, you know, looking at from afar named Felicia. And about 3 weeks later, I became the assistant manager of the gym. And our joke years later is that for about a year, I was her boss and now she's mine. So I ended up, we were one of those people that actually can say, not through a magazine, that we met at the gym. So we worked together, and we were both trainers at the same gym. So we were both into fitness separately, but still loved it equally. So that's how we met through fitness. And then our kids and keeping it real with them. It's not easy. We're not a holistic family. We do have food in boxes. I'll tell clients, like, you know, chances are the healthiest part of the box is probably the box. Not the food inside of it, but you know, kids are kids, you know, they're still going to have macaroni and cheese. They're still going to have, you know, certain foods that, you know, chicken fingers from a box, you know, but at the same time, have we implemented things that will change for them? 100%. Do we give them more veggies, you know, after school? Kids are going to be hungry. So, you know, they come up from school, there's a big veggie plate out. They kind of look at it for a little while, you know, wondering if it's going to change into a bag of chips. And all of a sudden, we walk in the living room and it's gone. And the dog didn't eat it. They ate it, you know. So it's, kids are going to eat what's in front of them. And they may protest it a bit at first. But it's not like what I do with my clients. Kids can't change all at once. You'll see a huge withdrawal with them. So we try and get them healthier. You know, I did an article a little while ago for the Huffington Post on stop calling snacks healthy snacks. It's either a snack or junk food. That's it. You know, snacks should be healthy, because if you tell the kids you want a healthy snack, they're going to say, no, I'd rather a candy bar. I don't want a healthy snack. So we try to implement it. Our kids are active. They're all in hockey, being Canadian. It's a must. So they all play hockey. But even there, because, you know, we don't want to give them that outlook on, you know, calorie counting and sugar and weight. And I know Felicia and I over the holidays or over, you know, if we're at it, because we're human beings, we have times in our life where stress is huge. So we do, like all people, our diet usually goes to hell. You know, with talking about it afterwards, you know, I don't drink anymore. My drinking was a huge part of my story, but I go to sugar instead. You know, so I can gain weight just as easily as I can lose it. But losing it, obviously being at 43 now, is a lot harder to do when I was 23. You know, so it's letting them know, you know, if we gained weight, we don't talk about it. If we gained 10 pounds over the holidays because we ate like garbage or we're stressed out, or we're not getting enough sleep at night, and all these things factor into it, we don't talk about it in front of them. You know, the schools in Toronto are implementing a very big nutritional component to the kids where they're teaching them things. But, you know, I find it weird when my 7-year-old will look at the back of a box and say, "Dad, I can have this. There's only 7 grams of sugar." All he's looking at is the sugar content. So, you know, and I know they're trying to teach the right thing by reading a label, but they don't understand. All they see is sugar. That's what they're taught. And that's what media is telling them. And sugar is bad. And, you know, where we have to give that other side of it going, yes, you can. So because of that, yes, you can have the fruit roll up. You know, so we have to give them a balance and make sure they're fit. You know, we, on top of playing hockey, my 12-year-old is in CrossFit. He's in a CrossFit program. We put him in a CrossFit because we wanted him to do more. There's so much education going on. You know, gym class here is down to minimal levels. And yeah, so we just, you know, we've got to keep him active. And it's a 45-minute program he does a couple of times a week. And you know, when you think of CrossFit, he's not doing, you know, big clean and jerks and all this, but he's doing monkey bars and throwing balls around. Essentially, I'm paying money for him to play. You know, the stuff that we did as kids outside, he's doing now inside. So he's doing that. My other two are running around, you know, and so we try and keep him as busy as we can, and not too programmed and structured, because that's going to be the opposite. You know, kids shouldn't have to complain and cry because all they want to do is go home and play, but we have to get them to the next program event. So we don't want to stress them out. And we try to make sure that, you know, food is planned properly. They're a big part of it. If they say there's nothing in the house to eat, okay, they'll come shopping. Let's see. We'll figure out some food we'll do together. And, you know, my oldest being 12 is at that rebelling stage of every time you listen to one of those podcasts of yours, it's a new thing we can't do. And, you know,
of course, tell your kids though that Aunt Kelly, I have those conversations with Kevin where I'm like, "Dad," I call him my dad, because I'm like, sometimes Kevin, it just feels like, you know, and that is true. You know, there are some people that can assimilate their learnings and apply everything and really go my words, hardcore, right? They're very hardcore. They're not tempted. And it works for them. But for people like me, and, you know, it sounds like I can relate to your kids and to many people. I like treats. I like packaged foods. I like to go to Olive Garden. So you find ways to cope with that and still make it big picture part of your lifestyle and what works for you. And, you know, it's just paying attention, right? A lot of people walk through life, and I think they're, whether it's their kids or themselves, they're just getting through the day. They're just doing what they've always done. I always eat this way. I always go out to eat at the office. I always go through the drive-thru. This is what works for me. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. You know, in my opinion, fitness, health, and wellness, and getting fitter or more fit or healthier, it's just about starting to pay attention and knowing the details and, you know, kind of tweaking them for yourself.
Yeah, you can't, you know, again, my weight loss story originally was, you know, go big or go home. But that's not for everybody. That's something that I had to do. That's my personality. You know, I had to cut things off, but you have to look at what works. You have to look at every source, you know, media, as we're learning now with a lot of fake media stories and everything else. There's so many opinions out there. And it, like we said earlier, it's in my opinion. So in my opinion, you have to do the research. I know when I listen to one of the Fifth Influential podcasts, I'm like, there are times where I've turned a few of them off going, I have to come back to this, because I'm going to have to start Googling stuff so I can do more research. Like, you know, what else can I learn from this? You know, how else can I change and make it more involved? But again, you can't turn it off. With things like my drinking, that's different. You know, I don't drink anymore. Therefore, that's a switch I've turned off.
Okay, so I'm gonna put a placeholder there because that's my next question. I think that's a good for us to wrap up on. You've had such great feedback to sharing your addiction story. I believe it was on Huffington Post, but I did want to piggyback one more question about kids because we have so many listeners that are either moms or, young parents with kids and they're struggling. And, you had mentioned that in your area with school that they're decreasing or maybe not even having gym time. And so you're encouraging your kids to get out and play. And that certainly is a lot of what Kevin and I have been sharing are these articles that are coming out about every week about the lack of this generation, the kids, that this the lack of activity that they have, the ultra dependence on technology, combined with a lot of them being not moderation, but having fast food, being in a coffee shop, having these high calorie sugary drinks, massive exposure to television and tablets and phones all the time and headphones and zero activity. Is that something that you're obviously doing it right with your kids, but what do you say for other kids? You don't say playmates. That sounds inappropriate. They're other kids, they're other friends. Are they, is this something that you see as well in your kids and their friends, is that there's this overwhelming tendency towards less activity, bad convenience foods all the time, and a lot of technology, and they just don't seem healthy? Do you observe that, or is that
100%.
Not?
That is everywhere. It's rampant and it's scary. And, the screens, and I know, I think every podcast talks about the same thing with influential, and I'm 100% on board with it. There's too much technology. There's too much blue light. There's too much everything. And our kids, not just technology in terms of what's happening to them on that mitochondrial cellular level. We're talking about my 12-year-old is saying, "Daddy, my neck hurts when I put it back on the couch." I'm like, "Your neck hurts because you crank it 4 inches forward, looking at a 3-inch screen." Right? So it's not just their technology is, they're so dependent on constantly watching and constant stimulation. But physically, like their actual posture is changing. They're not as busy. I don't know if you guys have it down there. The big thing up here is called a bottle flip. And the kids take a half-filled water bottle, and they grab it by the, and if parents listening, I'm sorry if I'm introducing this to your kids, ban it right away. But they flip the top of the water bottle and try to have it land upright. And they'll play it for hours on end. It's crazy. Somebody invented an app to do it. I'm like, "You're not even flipping it anymore. You flick a button on the screen." Like, they've even taken such a mundane, simple little wrist flip game and taken the wrist out of it. So it's like they've come so dependent on technology and convenient foods, and we're always on the go. Go to a baseball league, go to a hockey league, and most of the snack bars are filled with snacks, right? But they're not, like I said, not healthy snacks. It's all junk food. And that's what we're grabbing kids in between. So it's a huge thing for parents to watch out for and get kids off screens and get them, eating better foods. And it doesn't always have to be organic, but eat occasionally better foods and get them eating the right things so that their bodies can thrive and not just survive. Because right now they're on survival mode. They're just going through the paces. And we're going to see a huge thing down the road, unfortunately, if we don't change it.
Yeah, it sadly is a very big, it's one of those like big hairy topics we need to keep addressing because it is widespread and it is making a huge impact. God, not to be depressing, but we've talked about it on This Week in Health and Wellness. The death rate is changing because of kids growing up not healthy, adapting poor lifestyle habits and not being aware of it. I guess my last question on this topic, and then let's close with your addiction story, is, when you had such great messaging you just said there when you said you want to train your body to thrive. And I'm guessing that your kids pick up on what you're throwing down, right? Like they understand you're not trying to punish them. You're not saying, mommy and daddy are healthy and we want you to do exactly what we do just because we say so. Do you have parents maybe that you and Felicia train that don't know how to have those conversations with their kids? Like how do you start talking about this, or what's worked for you with your kids so that they don't, you know, like every kid wants the cell phone and they want their own cell phone when they're five, you know? I know Heidi Powell talked about the fact that she didn't get her kids' smartphones, and she had a conversation with, hey, this isn't just because we're trying to punish you. Here's why too much smartphone or tablet time can be bad for you. And then they get it. They don't feel like they're being punished. Is there something that's worked for you with your kids in, you know, getting them to understand what a healthy lifestyle is and why it benefits them? Or is it just more of an ongoing dialogue where you talk to them like adults so they don't feel like they're just being lectured to?
If you ask my 12-year-old, it's a constant lecture for me. We try to, they do have tablets. They do have, my oldest one does have a smartphone, but that's because he was taking public transit to school last year. And, you know, he gets mad at me because I do. I'll turn around and say, can you please put down your gaming device? And he goes, it's a phone, Dad. I'm like, really? I've never seen you use it like that before. You know, and it's, the conversation is getting better where if they want to use the screen time, they have to earn it. So they have to do something physical outside first, or they have to do educational stuff in the house. They have to do some schoolwork. If they don't have homework, they have to do something else educational. It could be anything. They can read about anything they want or learn about anything they want. And they can't be anything on the computer. They can't go, well, can I Google it? No screens. So they have to earn that screen time, but those screens go off at dinner and there's nothing else the rest of the night. You know, we want them to take it away so they don't have that problem.
It's hard. I've shared with everybody here that has been, I mean, Kevin, I'm free to have him verify this. Like it's been a behavioral change for me as a grown woman to have issue going, okay, gosh, this would now be the time when it's getting dark earlier that I'd read on my Kindle. But now I realize that if I'm reading my Kindle on my iPad, that is blue light. So I need to put on these geeky glasses that block the blue light. And really, it's not ideal for me to be, you know, doing that before bed. I have seen, now that I've changed my lifestyle, that when I do bring stuff back and I decide, I did it last night, I decided to read my Kindle. I was setting up a new iPad and I had, this is the God's honest truth, I woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't fall back to sleep. And I track everything. So I see that it correlates with times that I've either chosen to watch TV on the weekends or done something tablet related. So behaviorally, it can be challenging, but it can be done. And it's a challenge, I just say, for both children and adults. But it sounds like you've got a good vibe there. Yeah. No, you're doing it well. That's awesome. So I do want you to be able to share, and we'll link up to this, you know, some of the pieces that you've written about, because you have a really tremendous story of addiction and recovery that you shared very transparently online. And a lot of people were moved and inspired by this. And I'd love it if you could share. We'll link up to that piece if it's possible on Fitfluential Radio. But tell us about that.
Well, it came about years after I was married, a few years after we had a kid, we had a business, we had a gym, and, I liked alcohol. I liked to drink. I liked the taste of it. I liked everything about it. And then I guess parts of my past, I guess that I had blocked, and decided not to know about it anymore, resurfaced somehow. And I wouldn't say that I drank for any other reason other than to self-medicate. So it was just a lot of covering up, and everything that would come up, I would drink more, you know, and it came down to me, literally, it was self-medication. And I link that up, you know, it could be anything you self-medicate with, not just alcohol, it could be food. And that's really what I do a lot of with now with people because of my addiction to drinking. You know, we had a business, we had almost a 1.5-year-old, our oldest. And, you know, Felicia came home one night and found me passed out on the kitchen floor. And the look on her face, I mean, lying there, when you look up and you see your wife looking down at you, you know, my first thought was a major expletive in my mind. And it wasn't like, oh my God, you know, my wife just caught me passed on the floor. It was, oh my God, I remember giving my son a bath, but I don't remember putting him to bed. So I ran right from there, her staring at me, looking like she was about to kill me. I ran to the, to his bedroom, and he was there, thank God. And that was it. And it came to that realization that, you know, I had gotten to that point because I was self-medicating, and it was me going into a program on my own. It wasn't court ordered or doctor ordered or wife ordered. It was me going in on my own and saying, okay, I need to figure out why I did this. Because I do believe that everybody who is abusing a substance of some sort is doing it for a reason. And it's a self-medicating thing. And the difference between alcohol, drugs, and food, alcohol and drugs, you know, if I were to relapse, everybody would be like, oh, so hard, you know. But once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You know, it's, all these things come up. But if somebody dropped 150 pounds and then gained it back because of stress and life happened, oh, poor Susie, she just can't keep it off. Why is one acceptable than the other? They're eating for a reason. They're drinking for a reason, and it's self-medicating. So my story was that, you know, and when I, while I went through all that, we still had our business. I got permission. It was a 21-day live-in program where I asked permission to live out because I still had a business. I had a gym I had to run. I still had a family. I hoped I had a family at home still. And so I would wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to work, trade my clients, go to the rehab for 9, finish at 4, head back to work, still live life because I'm still that guy of go big or go home, right? I can't do it easy. I couldn't shut it all down. And it was hard. But it was looking back at it when I finished that 3-week stint, I was like, everybody has to do this. I don't care if you drink or not. It was a school of life. So it really taught me why I was drinking, why I was going to those areas. And then after we had shut down there, you know, and I quit drinking, our business was struggling at times. And we had a few doors down from us, a bulk candy and nut store. And it was wonderful. And they knew if I was having a really good day and business was great, I'd go in and I'd spend 10 bucks on nuts and this and that. If it wasn't a great day, I'd go in and spend 10 bucks on like Mike and Ike's, you know, and just go crazy with candy. And they'd be like, bad day. Yeah, don't start. So it was, you know, I still have the vices there, hence like the ice cream, right? But my big thing was going through the struggles and knowing that I had to do it for me, right? It wasn't doing it. I didn't do it for my son. I didn't do it for Felicia, because at the end of the day, I knew that there was a chance when I finished my program that I was going to come home and there was not going to be a family there. And I had to do it for me. And that's a huge thing, you know, when you try to give that up, but it was finding why I was doing it. And that was my biggest thing, in knowing that I had my own demons that I was hiding from, and I had to recognize them and know they're there and know that that happened. And, you know, after we're all done, you know, drinking my day away, when I wake up the next morning sober, it's all still there. And the same with everything. You know, if you have a bad day and you go and eat crappy food because you feel bad, it starts that downward spiral. When you wake up the next day and you feel crappy about it, you know, you do it again because you feel bad about yourself. And that's not worth it. You know, in the long run, it's just not worth it.
FitFluential Radio fans, I have a gift for you. And by gift, I mean the gift that truly keeps on giving. Head on over right now to fitfluential.com/membership and sign up for our now live VIP FitFluential membership. Our FitFluential membership is not a diet program. It's not a workout program. You will have access to learning from some of the best trainers, dietitians, nutritionists, doctors, chiropractors, massage therapists, chefs, athletes, authors. I could go on and on and on. A lot of folks that have been on this show. What our FitFluential membership is designed to do is meet you in the middle and provide all of the education and inspiration that you need, all of the community and accountability that you crave, and everything else that's going to keep you from being one of those statistics in January
all those people that say, I'm going to get healthier this year. I'm going to live my best life. And then by the third week in January, the second week in February, all of those aspirations are gone. Don't let that be you. Go to fitfluential.com/membership and sign up now.
So you, everything you said there, and it's whether you have, like, I love that you laid it out that addiction is addiction is addiction. And it's not to minimize, anybody that has an alcohol addiction, and it's not to pick one over the other. This isn't a favorite child kind of a thing, but it is true that the key, I've always focused on this, and it's what I've shared has helped me grow and change so much, is being able to, just what you said, figure out why I do things. Because a lot of times we go through life, it could be things we're doing in the professional space. It could be, you know, I've realized in myself, I have this tendency to want to please everybody and want everybody to approve of me. And it's held me back in personal relationships, certainly in my business in the past. I mean, it's one of the things I'm catching myself on. Like, it's not my job to make to say yes to everybody, to accommodate everybody. So I just, number one, I commend you for sharing that, because people, this concept of figuring out what, like, become your own psychologist, right? Figure out why you do things. Like, you know, to relate in a food context, I figured out about myself, I still haven't quite garnered the why, but helping me understand, when I get mad, the first thing I want to do is eat bad food. It's a knee-jerk reaction. I recognized it in myself. I realized that whenever somebody would really upset me, at the time it was Burger King, and I'm like, I'm going to Burger King. That's it. I'm getting a Whopper with cheese. I'm getting everything on it, extra mayonnaise, and I'm getting fries and a Diet Coke, and that's it. It would be like, and I go, wait a minute, why is it every time I'm angry, I want to go eat food that's going to make me feel more in a bad way tomorrow? So the problem, like you said, that problem's still there. I've made it worse. I haven't done anything to make it better. And so even though I haven't potentially connected the dots for myself as to why, when I get mad, do I want to eat bad food, I still am able to pause, recognize it, and, you know, change my course. So I love what you said. I love that you recognize that it was a behavioral pattern you had to do for you. For those people that are listening, Matt, that potentially are in the midst of recognizing they have an addiction problem with alcohol or drugs or both, or maybe it's food, maybe it's anything else. Was this something that that Felicia knew about? Were you drinking in private and she didn't know until she found you on the floor? So that's my first question. And then I have an immediate follow-up question. So that's a brief question. Was this something that was you kept hidden from everybody and nobody knew?
People knew. I mean, I would go to the bar. She didn't know I was going to the bar. But, you know, she knew there's a problem. I had tried to stop a couple times before then, almost like quitting smoking type of thing. You know, when we had first gone, my very first, about 6 months earlier, she had come to an AA meeting with me. Different programs work for different people. And we walked in there and, you know, we were laughing we laugh about this stuff now, but we tried, you know, we tried AA. So she knew that I was doing it. But then I was doing a lot of it in secret. Right. So there was a lot of addicts become very, very creative people. They become very creative. They're very smart people who hide things. They're very good at it.
I've certainly hidden some, my own share of like Oreos and
yeah,
from my roommate, you know, like because I just didn't want her to think I wasn't on my diet back in the day. So yeah, I agree with you. So then my next question is, there's a lot of people listening that maybe this show is going to make an impact on them. And I also am personally, you know, I'm dealing with several good friends of mine that have, you know, sons that are dealing with massive addiction, and trying to get them to want to help. Was there for you, you know, it was a pretty traumatic incident, right? Felicia came home, you were passed out. Is there something that you can say to folks? Because I know the people that I've talked to that have come on out the other side, right? A friend of mine has a son, and he hit bottom. He went through, and he's young, he's like 27 years old. He's gone through a drug and alcohol rehabilitation, and he's clean and sober. And he's like, he said to me, for these other women that have sons his age, I'm happy to talk to them. I'm happy. Is there something that you would say to folks that are struggling that you know as an addict / former addict that would make them comfortable to seek help? What would you tell them to do?
The biggest thing is knowing that there's a reason why they're doing it, right? That it's for majority, there's a reason why they're doing it. And it's being there and understanding that they need it. Often they need someone there who is going to be there. They're not going to yell and scream, and to be a part of that journey. They've got to go, okay, listen, you're here. I love you and I want to help you. So what can we do? I'm not going to give you $20 to go out and buy anything. The bottom line is that most of the time they're asking for help in some way or the other. You know, I had a friend of mine, one of my best friends, was a cocaine addict, and he was living at his parents' house when we were younger, and he kept all the bags that he got his cocaine in his sock drawer, empty. That's screaming, please help me. Like, you know, me, I didn't recycle. I didn't throw any bottles I was drinking. I was still screaming, help me, help me, help me. Because once you're in the throes of it, you can't do it on your own. That first step, you know, and people have to realize, when somebody has an addiction, whether it's food, alcohol, or drugs, giving that up is giving up their best friend. And you have to remember that. If your go-to to make you feel better, like a best friend would, is because you feel isolated and you don't want it, you can't feel that, you can't talk to anybody about your problems, you're going to go to food, you're going to go to drugs, you're going to go to alcohol, you're going to go to something, sex, whatever it is, gambling. It's knowing that that's been there for them in the hardest times of their life. Giving up that, you're letting go of your best friend. And that's a hard thing to do, because all of a sudden, for the first time in a long time, you're going to be alone. And that's how it feels. You're going to be alone. And when I became sober, when I stopped drinking, somebody turned to me and said, just so you know, the amount of people that are going to be there for you at this point in time can fit on the back of a motorcycle. And it was like, whoa. So my fear of being alone, crap, I'm alone. it was huge. But at the same time, it was so enlightening to say, okay, well, I've got nowhere to go but up. There's nowhere else I can go. So letting people know that, you know, as when you look at somebody who's addicted to something, that you are there for them, and that you have to understand that it is the hardest thing for somebody to give up, because it is saying goodbye to their best friend.
And you know, that's probably a good point to end on, because I'm pulling something out of what you said, in that there's addicts of all kinds, right? We all have our own struggles. We all do things motivated by negative reasons, by positive reasons, whatever. We all have our issues. Everybody does. And for those of you that are struggling with a drug or an alcohol problem, trust that there are so many, even though I think what you said is that, you know, with the drug being your best friend, right? Or the alcohol being your best friend, you're going to give that up. But I think most people, when they decide to get help, will be pleasantly surprised that they're not going to suffer the judgment that they think. Yes, you can get that. Same thing, even if you decide to get healthier and fit, you get judgment from potentially coworkers or family, right? But there are people that have been down that journey. If you go into AA, if you go into drug, that want to help you, that want to be there for you, and they will become the best friends and support system for you. And so reach out, talk to somebody, don't worry about judgment, because the first step to getting better is, you know, confiding in somebody. I know I started to make a lot more progress in my life when I shared things on my blog and on my YouTube videos, and people would write into me going, thank God, I'm not the only one. I'm so glad that you shared that you have this. So I just encourage everybody that's listening, if you're inspired by, you know, this part of the interview, certainly with Matt's addiction problem in the past and his recovery, which has been remarkable, and you're such a great influence now. First of all, we're going to put links to his articles and where you can connect with him. Reach out to Matt. He's not the type of guy 100%. That's going to go, you know, I don't have time for you. Reach out to Matt. We'll put links to the show for other spots that you can go online to start getting some information. But just want to encourage you to reach out, to ask for help, to know that you're not alone in any of these areas. And, you know, that's why we're doing this show, to bring you real stories of real people that are keeping it real, but also motivating the hell out of you to do something better with your life. Because frankly, I know you can. We all can. And Matt, I just want to thank you so much for being on the show. I adore you and your wife. I think that you're extraordinary people. I love watching you. I can't wait to hang out with you in person. And I hope that I can get you back on the show later this year. Do you think you'll be able to do that?
100%, Kelly. We'd love to be part of it again.
Awesome. So everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Again, check out the links that we mentioned. They'll be live on fitfluentialradio.com, and we will see you next time.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Fitfluential Radio. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Please visit us on iTunes and like this episode and subscribe to the podcast. We want this to be your podcast, so please head over to iTunes, write a review, and give us your feedback. Give us your ideas and even guest suggestions. For a full transcript of all episodes and bonus giveaways, be sure to visit fitfluentialradio.com. We look forward to seeing you again for the next episode of Fitfluential Radio. Peace! Please remember our disclaimer for the podcast. The materials and content discussed within the podcast are the opinions of host Kelly Alexa and the guests interviewed. This information is intended as general information only for listeners of the podcast. Listeners should always seek professional advice, and content and opinions expressed in the podcast should never be construed as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.